Midway point of the month of Thursday, June the 15th, 2023, on Connecticut Today, we featured Connecticut Inside investigator, reporter Mark Fitch, on questions being raised about a failed piece of health care legislation at the state capitol and who really killed that bill. Only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by with his weekly update, and I had some thoughts on a coming visit by President Joe Biden. Our buddy, our pal Mark Fitch, a reporter extraordinaire for the Yankee Institute and their Inside Investigator page, insideinvestigator.org, Connecticut Inside Investigator. And Mark has a piece that you all should read regarding a proposal for health care that a lot of people seem to like. It did made sense to even a dummy like me. But for some reason, it didn't get passed, and there are a lot of folks now looking at this, most of them reading Mark's report, saying, hey, what's up here? Mark, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Mark. So I guess this was that bill that had a couple of hearings and a lot of people saying, hey, if trade associations want to get together and form a collective and shop around for insurance, maybe that should happen. And Mark, as I recall, there was a little pushback, but not much. But again, late in the session, what happened here?
Sure. And there was some pushback from the more progressive wing of the Democrat Party in allowing these association healthcare plans to go through. Basically, what it would have done is it would have made things a little easier for small businesses because they could all join together into these groups and, you know, purchase these big health insurance plans. And yeah, it was supported by, you know, Republicans, the business, you know, industry, and a lot of Democrats as well. But it was never called up for a vote. And what happened was the last day of session, Access Health CT, which is Connecticut's Obamacare health exchange, sent out an early morning email to all the lawmakers suddenly saying, you know, you have to kill this bill, essentially, like, we do not support this passing. One of their primary reasons was that it would essentially cost them a lot of money. Access Health CT makes their money on an assessment fee for insurance premiums purchased in the state. So that includes small group insurance. And if all these small groups went into these association healthcare plans, they wouldn't be able to assess that fee, and it could cost them a lot of money. What's kind of interesting about this is that throughout all the committee battles and hearings and everything else surrounding this bill, and there was a lot of, you know, media attention on this bill, Access LCT never said a word. They didn't offer public testimony. They didn't try to meet with some of the promoters of the bill, like Representative Kerry Wood. So it just kind of came out of left field. And the other issue that, you know, Representative Wood and some others took up with the email is they said it contained a lot of misinformation, things that had been brought up during committee hearings and committee meetings, but had been kind of put to rest when the Office of Legislative Research did their analysis of the bill and said, no, these health plans will have to comply with all federal regulations and state regulations and all these different things. So they basically saw it as this, like, kind of underhanded last minute, you know, bid to kill this bill when they had never said anything previously. So it was a bit of a shock for a lot of the proponents. A
few more minutes here with one of our regular guests, Mark Fitch, InsideInvestigator.org. Mark, using his reporting skills to dig into stuff, he posted a story a couple of days ago. Access Health Connecticut made a last-minute bid to kill association health plans. And by association health plans, that obviously means, you know, if the auto body shops want to get together, if hair salons want to get together, group their numbers and get cheaper insurance here. Now, Mark, thank you for doing this in posting the actual email here. And it's sent out, Mark, from a CT.gov email. So it came from a Kathleen Tallarita here. Did she decide to push back on this? Who does she work for?
Well, she is the government affairs and communications manager. I imagine she works under the government affairs director at Access Health CT. I seriously doubt that this just came from her on a whim, but that's who the email came from. She's also a former Democrat state representative. So, you know, that's who the email came from. But I know that, you know, as I wrote in the article, Representative Kathy Wood is or Carrie Wood is requesting a meeting with Access Health CT to figure out what happened here. Because, you know, frankly, you know, the information that they're citing had been out for months. I mean, I'd even written about it.
Yeah.
As had others. So, you know, were they just not paying attention and dropped the ball and didn't, you know, had to do this in the last second, hoping to make sure this thing goes away? You know, otherwise, you know, they could have offered public testimony and the committee members could have taken their thoughts under advisement.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Access Health CT is a major quasi-public government entity for the state of Connecticut, you know, getting, you know, health coverage to, you know, 100,000 plus people every year. So their voice does matter and it does carry some weight. So it was, like I said, it was a surprise and out of left field for the proponents of the bill. And, you know, those who, you know, wanted to see this pass, they think that this kind of might've tipped the scales in favor of killing the bill. And of course it was the last day of session. So, you know, time is running short.
There's a shock. So, Mark Fitch, you know, she's the government affairs person, but as you and I are probably thinking here, somebody, Mark, inside Access Health CT or somewhere, somebody had to say, send that email. I mean, that's to me, right? She's the government affairs director, but somebody had to say, yeah, click send on that because we got to kill this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I doubt that would have just been one person's decision. So,
any thoughts any thoughts on who that might have been, or do you not want to say?
Well, I have no idea. But yeah. You know, she is the government affairs and communications manager. There is a government affairs director that works for Access Health CT.
Uh-huh.
I imagine that is her boss. So. I and something like this, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it went through the CEO of Access Health CT, because this is something. I mean, you know, if what they're claiming is true, that it would cost them this much money. I mean, that would be a threat to the survival of Access Health. And, you know, you would figure it'd be all hands on deck to, you know, figure out how to best handle this legislation. It doesn't seem like it was handled in the best way. You know, probably the better way would have been to, you know, follow this along through the process and, you know, giving your input. Instead, there was just this last minute email.
And Mark, you just took the words right out of my mouth. If they oppose something, Mark, you know, and I know, if anybody opposes a bill in Hartford, that's what they have testimony for. And maybe the General Assembly could have said, well, we understand your concerns here. We get it. But we still want to offer these association plans. So maybe let's figure something out here that could make both people, both sides happy. And Mark, you know as well as I do, this is the kind of thing that goes on in Hartford, despite all the kumbaya from time to time. This is the kind of thing that just makes people roll their eyes.
Yeah, and you know, it's I know it was a big priority for the business community to get this this health bill through, and they walk away disappointed. So, you know, I guess there's always next year, but I, you know, who knows if they'll have that kind of momentum again. This was really pushed hard, and you know, it got through the committee process. It was approved by the Appropriations Committee as well. It just never made it to the floor.
Sad. Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. And keep digging. Hopefully you can find, who actually gave the go-ahead on this. Love to see what they would say to you in a statement, or maybe you can get a sit-down with them. Access Health Connecticut made last-minute bid to kill association health plans. From Inside Investigator, check it out, insideinvestigator.org, Mark Fitch. Mark, thank you, and keep up the great work. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right, folks, so there it is. So again, this was a bill that had a lot of bipartisan support in Hartford that would have allowed trade associations. You know what a trade association is, right? Connecticut Realtors, the Connecticut Auto Body Shops, the State Medical Society. This would have allowed trade associations to basically shop around for health coverage for their members and save some money. So at the 11th hour, the people who run the Obamacare exchange in Connecticut apparently flipped out and started telling legislators, you have to kill this bill. Now, here's the thing. Before we go to traffic and weather together, here's the problem here. All right, maybe there would have been some damage to the Obamacare marketplace here in Connecticut, right? All right, maybe there would have been some problems. Well, then, if that's the case, the people who run the Obamacare exchange in this state, who run the Affordable Care Act, you have an obligation then, do you not, you folks, to come before the House and Senate when they have these, when these committees have public hearings and say, hey, I represent the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare exchange in Connecticut, and we think this is bad, right? Just go have the, as people in my tribe like to say, have the gullions, have I gullioni, to go up there and say, look, we're against this because. So why were the Affordable Care Act people here in Connecticut, why were they hiding till the last minute here? Eh? See, folks, this is the kind of stuff that goes on in the shadows at the last minute that just makes people cynical, right? You're probably listening to me right now. You're rolling your eyes saying, geez, Paul, what do you expect? Right now, as we check in to start the 5 o'clock hour every Thursday, Lenny Grimaldi, the website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
What's going on, Pope Pacelli? Yeah, good to be back.
Good. God. Well, I'm the pontiff now. This is good. I like
this.
You're
like pontiff. You're my uncle. You're
nice.
Right?
Nice. Lenny, I just want to ask before we start, you don't have any classified documents hanging around there, do you? I just want to make sure.
I've got all kinds. Yes, I'm holding them. Just so that, for an exclusive for this show.
Yeah.
It's like I got boxes full of them on a stage inside of a, inside of a hotel room where people could come in and just step up and take a look at this document. Take a look at that document on North Korea and Russia and whatever.
Lenny, does anything surprise you with your old pal Donald John Trump anymore or not?
No, not at all. It's just, it takes on a life of its own and fascinating development. We talked a little bit about it last week.
Yeah.
Or we felt like he was going to be on the verge of a federal indictment, and he's the first former president to be indicted federally, and he's going to try to maximize this all he can for fundraising, number one. But my sense is he's going to try to delay this as long as he can,
mm-hmm.
in the hope that he becomes president again, then he controls the Justice Department, and then he could just dismiss it. He would have the power and authority to do so. I don't know if it's going to get to that, but I think that's his thinking right now, because these cases, because of discovery and what you have to turn over federally to lawyers, it takes a long time. So, what could a trial be like set for, early 2024? Possibly, but when lawyers are involved, everything tends to slow down. And I'm sure he's going to try to get his lawyers, whoever he hires to represent him, to put the brakes on this thing as long as possible.
Wow. And Lenny, you mentioned, I think it was you that said this to me, and I've read this in other stuff pretty much nationally, that have said, why did he do this? Why would he do something like this? Are retaining these documents, is it some sort of currency? And I think you and some other people who've known him closely say, no, he just likes to build shrines to himself and just likes to have this stuff to show people. You still think that?
Oh, no doubt. He plays by his own rules, and that can get sticky and it can get tricky, right? So as I've noted in the past, in our past interviews, mm-hmm. he's used to being king, and it's hard to be king when you're a president or even a former president.
Yeah.
And I think so, you know, when I worked for him, he didn't make any bones about it. I mean, he would share openly that to him, life is one gigantic game to play, and he's in it to win it no matter what. So this stuff, yeah, on some level, it obviously bothers him. And then he flips the switch and he goes, okay, how can I maximize this benefit on my behalf? And that's going to be fundraising and keeping his base engaged. Yeah. And it's tricky also for establishment Republicans to say, how are we going to counteract this stuff? Hmm. And it's just really too soon to say.
Wow. Yeah, it's true, Lenny. All right, locally here, the city's getting a new school superintendent. Talk about Carmela Levy David.
So, after a national search, the Board of Education went outside of the system. So when Michael Testani left Bridgeport as the school chief to go to Fairfield as the school leader there, Alicia Perrin was brought on, a local educator, to be the acting superintendent of schools. So in the end, it came down to Alicia Perrin and Carmela Levy David. Mm-hmm. And she seems like she checks all of the boxes. She comes from a school system outside of Houston.
Yeah.
But she comes from, you know, she speaks fluent Spanish, background, Jamaican background, mm-hmm. a Panamanian background. So I think that is part of what the school board liked. You know, she has a really good story to tell. And so after this search, they brought in an outsider, and it's been, you know, Bridgeport has gone through a whole bunch of school leaders in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully there's some stability with her on board. She's new to the area. She's going to, you know, get filled up on what life is like in Bridgeport, Connecticut. But she brings some strong credentials to the table because, you know, she does represent a school system that has, you know, roughly 80,000 students. So it's not a small district where she's coming from to segue into, you know, the largest school district in the state of Connecticut.
What would you say, Lenny Grimaldi, might be the new superintendent's biggest challenge? What's issue number one for her that she'll have to deal with from your point of view?
It's budget, right? And each year, the Board of Education struggles to maximize the state dollars and local dollars to fully fund the school system. And that's always a debate. You know, how much do you really need? We've talked about this. How mm-hmm. much do you really need to fulfill all of the promise of a local school system? So I think it's a couple of things. She'll come in here and she needs to get to know the powerhouses in the state of Connecticut that fund local schools, get to know the city's state house delegation, legislative delegation, which is 9 members. It's the largest in the state. And they had a pretty good General Assembly session. They brought in extra dollars. But there's always that, you know, when are we going to hit that cliff again where we don't have the money that we need to sustain the school system? So I think it's really a lot about building relationships, get to know the local delegation, and get filled up about the local scene. It's a hard challenge, but you know, she seems to have checked all the boxes, and there's been no blowback so far from this pick.
Finally, Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. The mayor's race for candidates still strong on the Democratic side. What's the latest there? And I see Lamon Daniels is getting ready to officially open his headquarters.
Yeah, I mean, we're only, you know, here we are mid-June. So we're going to have an endorsement from mayor next month, and Joe Gannon will be endorsed. And then it's all hands on deck because you're going to have Lamon Daniels John Gomes, State Senator Marilyn Moore, who are going to go out and hustle, presumably, the signatures that you're going to need to get on the ballot for a September primary. So this stuff is going to be like one giant swirl into going into the September primary. You know, this is like everybody kind of gets amped up. There's charges, countercharges. You know, it's I like to call it the silly season of campaigning.
Sure.
You know, I love it because my, you know.
Oh, I do too. Oh,
readers,
come on.
My readers, my readers like red meat, right?
Oh, come on, chaos, Lenny. I always say for guys like you and me, we love the chaos. Come on, man.
Oh, my God, that's angel food cake for me, right? And mother's milk and whatever else you want to throw on top of it. But
yeah,
you're going to start. You're going to see where some of Gannon's opponents are going to start, you know, digging in.
Sure.
And trying to draw that contrast of why they should fire him and, you know, elect him. So, you know, and again, Gannon's right now, he's playing power of incumbency.
Mm-hmm. Lenny, finally, are they slated to all debate at one time? Are we going to get all four of these candidates on a debate stage or not?
Not sure yet. So pretty soon you're going to have a lot of the various political organizations who are going to reach out to the candidates.
Yeah.
And see who wants to participate. So none of that. I haven't heard any information yet that anything is firm. But I suspect that getting close to the primary election, once we know the full field, because we don't know yet, because the opponents have to go out and petition their way onto the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
I think once that is established, then you'll see some of these potential dialogues and debate coming together prior to September primary.
Great stuff. Check it out, folks. Only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, thank you. Have a good week. Good weekend. We'll check with you back next week. Thank you.
See you next week. Thank you.
All right, Lenny. Thank you. Yeah, when's that debate going to happen, huh? I like that. So sometime tomorrow, President Biden's going to be in Connecticut, and the subject is going to be guns and gun safety. And I'm interested to see what the message is going to be, what Mr. Biden is going to say, what some of the folks who are going to be in attendance tomorrow, Friday, are going to say. He's going to make his third official trip to Connecticut tomorrow, Friday, to deliver an address at a major gun violence prevention summit at the University of Hartford. Now, whenever I bring up this topic, and by the way, the phone number here is 203-333-9422. It as always is 333-WICC. Whenever I bring up this topic, I feel the need to tell you this, because I think when I say this, I hopefully will put my thoughts in a little bit better of a perspective than you might assume, because, look, you know what my politics is, and for people who haven't heard me before talk about guns, the way I talk about guns, my present feelings on gun laws, gun violence, and all that, and the Second Amendment, you immediately, if you didn't hear me in the past and don't know my sincerity on this, a lot of people might immediately brand me as, oh, there he is. He's another one of those right-wing gun nuts. He wears flannel shirts, you know, used to drink Budweiser before Dylan Mulvaney, and loves Ted Nugent and has 10 guns. No, 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 no. I've never fired a live round of ammunition in my life. I've been on this earth over 62 years now, and for whatever reason, I'm not afraid of it. I just have not had the time or the interest to do it. I have numerous friends who own guns, most of them highly qualified, what you would say is white-collar professionals. So I'm not hanging around with a bunch of gun degenerates, gun nuts, as people would like to say. So I've handled a few guns. I've dry-fired a few guns in the proper environment. But I have not fired a live round of ammunition. I am not a member of the National Rifle Association. I am not an NRA member. Now, will I change those two multiple statuses? Will I ever change that in a few years? Yeah, maybe when I get to a more advanced age. Maybe I have more time. Maybe I buy a gun. I don't know. I have no idea. But I want to tell you that up front, that I'm not an NRA member. I've never fired a live round of ammunition. I've never been to a gun range. But yet I have no problem with people who do. Now, having said that, and the other thing you should know, and you've probably heard me say this to you before, I've lost a very, very dear and close family member years ago, back in 1978. So that was, 45 years ago, this coming August, a day that still rings true to me. I can see the occurrences, see and hear the sounds on that day like it was yesterday, literally. I lost a very dear and close family member to gun violence. So yeah, I've kind of seen both sides of this. I have a lot of friends who are gun enthusiasts. I have, and I know what it's like to get that phone call when, you know, you hear the message that someone has been shot or killed, and you wish and you hope and you pray for that 1 or 2 or 3 seconds, as that is sinking into your cranium, you know, you're praying here going, what? You're praying beyond all prayerful power that it's a dream or it is it's somehow a sick joke, but it wasn't. So I know what that's like. So tomorrow, and who knows what the message will be? They're not, you know, the White House, and having covered some presidential stuff in my life, they normally give out copies, paper copies of the speech within a few minutes of whatever president is going to, you know, talk about whatever you're there to cover for him or her. So it'll be guns tomorrow. So we won't know what Mr. Biden is going to say regarding guns. In Hartford, at UHA, the University of Hartford, which is actually in West Hartford, I believe, technically. So we'll see. Now, there are going to be some other people on hand there. He'll arrive midday, Bradley, tomorrow. Governor Ned Lamont is going to greet him. And it's going to come on the one-year anniversary of his signing the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, says here. In the Connecticut Post, Congress passed in the wake of the massacre of 19 students and 2 teachers at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. Now, again, the president is going to urge again, undoubtedly tomorrow, that we pass bolder legislation, they're going to say, aimed at reducing gun violence, including a restoration of the federal ban on military-style rifles, whatever military means. That's a media-created term. It's likely he'll continue to do so Friday while also boosting his administration's rollout of the Bipartisan Safe Communities Act, including an increase in prosecutions against gun dealers. And they're going to talk about ghost guns and everything. Now, we should prosecute gun dealers, should we not, or criminal gun dealers? But here is what we won't hear tomorrow. Or maybe if we do, and I'm wrong on this, you know, I'll come out tomorrow and start the show and say, well, look at that. Look at that. I'm actually surprised they did something on this. But I don't think so. But that's just me. What do I want to see? And again, we're going to get the platitudes tomorrow. We'll hear about AR-15s. And I know it's a dangerous weapon. Believe me, I know that. And we're going to hear about universal background checks. Okay, whatever. By the way, can you name me a mass shooting that would have been stopped by a background check? I mean, all these recent shootings we've had, and I'm sure there's some. I'm just saying that rhetorically here. But a lot of these recent shootings, haven't we heard? Haven't we heard, perhaps, that all of these recent shootings, at least maybe not all, but a good amount of them, the shooter who tragically kills people, him or her, passes background checks? You know, how often do we hear police and law enforcement officials on the federal and local level say, well, research or information indicates that the alleged shooter here purchased the weapons in question legally. Okay. So we're going to hear about more background checks tomorrow. We're going to hear about AR-15s. We're going to hear about assault weapons. That's all well and good. And maybe I'll be surprisingly shocked if they say anything about getting tougher with gun criminals. And I hope I'm wrong here, but we're going to hear, I guess, perhaps a lot tomorrow about the guns themselves and the ghost guns and the gun dealers and background checks. But are we going to hear anything about criminals, especially criminality at a young age? See, I'm a big believer in you should, and I know I would get pushback from this because we're in the middle now of a society that thinks the fewer people in jail, the better. I don't necessarily buy into that. I think it depends on the crime, the age, and whatever. But are we going to hear anything about getting tougher with people who commit gun crimes? Yeah, get tougher with the gun dealers, the unscrupulous gun dealers and gun traffickers and gun runners and guys and gals who print and 3D print or traffic in these so-called ghost guns. That's great. All for that. Rah, rah. Go America. But man, oh man, what we never hear about is the gun criminals. Well, you can't have mandatory minimums for this, Paul. Why not? Well, you know, if you put these people in jail for too many years, then just other people will commit the crimes. Well, that's good. Keep the assembly line going. Keep the conga line going. See, my point is, and I'm sure we're going to hear it from Mr. Biden tomorrow and Governor Lamont and whatever, we always look at this from the gun angle of things, right? It's the guns. It's the AR-15s. It's the high-capacity magazines. It's the 3D-printed gun. Do we ever look at this, and maybe we do, and I missed it, and you can be free to tell me at 333-9422, 333-WICC. Feel free to call or email me, Paul, at WICC600.com. Do we ever get tougher on the people that pull the triggers? Do we make sure that they serve the maximum amount of time behind bars? Does that ever happen? Or are we still going to go, the gun? Look, the guns aren't going away. I don't know how many times I have to sit here and say this over and over and over again. You could stop, you could outlaw every AR-15 out there, and there's 10 to 15 million of them still out there. But do we ever talk about the criminals, the people who are already breaking the law, like this? Connecticut Post, Josh LaBella's story. We'll get to the phones. Hang on. Two brothers were arrested Sunday for throwing an illegal assault rifle out of their vehicle last month as they fled a traffic stop, officials say. Stratford police saying Charlie Echevarria, 28, and Moses Echevarria, 24, were arrested on Lenox Avenue. The brothers fled from a motor vehicle stop May 23rd, during which they threw a duffel bag out of the window that contained an assault rifle. The weapon did not have a serial number and is considered a ghost gun. And they eventually got these two. All right. Several weapons were seized during a subsequent search of a resident there. Okay, now what's going to happen to those guys? I don't know. Well, they're going to plead it down maybe a couple of years. No! In jail for 10 years. No plea bargain. Well, you know, Paul, we don't have the room. I don't care. Build more jails. How about this in the Hartford Courant? Three juveniles arrested in Wolcott after a boy reports of being robbed at gunpoint 2 days in a row. Three juveniles now, starting them young, huh? Hey, don't go to college. Just, you know, jack people. Three juveniles were taken into custody in Woolcott on Tuesday after a boy said he was robbed 2 days in a row at gunpoint. Woolcott police responding to Peterson Park Tuesday after a concerned citizen saw a boy bleeding from the face. The boy told police he had been robbed by two teens at gunpoint and that they took his chain, a cell phone, AirPods, and $15. The boy said he was punched in the face with brass knuckles and that the same two teens robbed him at gunpoint a day earlier, taking $50. Bottom line, Woolcott police saying the two suspects, 16 and 17, are in jail, in prison right now, or they're under arrest. Mom and dad must be proud. Again, now, here's my point. We're going to hear tomorrow about the ghost guns, this, and the high-capacity magazines, that, and AR-15, whatever, and yeah, blah, 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 blah. How about we concentrate a little less on the gun and more on the criminals and the criminality of people who commit gun crimes? I know, I'm being crazy.